All right, guys. Well, thanks for coming back to another episode of Random Rewatch. And this episode, we are going to do 1991. I know I said in the last, at the end of the last episode, I said 92, and I don't even know what I was thinking. But we are definitely in 1991, and we are looking at a film that I used to love when I was younger. Back in the 90s, this thing was on cable all the time, and it was really such an important film, and it's such a groundbreaking film. And it wasn't anything that had really been seen before, something like this. And so this is Mario Van Peebles' magnum opus, if you will, New Jack City.
Wesley Snipes, we will own the city. Ice-T. On the streets, there's a fine line between wrong and right, good and bad, between those who enforce the law.
It is a war out there.
And those who break it.
Gone are the days of selling on the street corners, dark alleyways, and the back rooms of some bummy-ass bar. We ain't with that no more.
In a city where survival depends on friends.
It's always business. Never personal.
Am I my brother's keeper? Yes, I am!
A family out to run a city are up against cops who know its streets.
This ain't business. This is personal.
Starring Wesley Snipes and Ice-T and Judd Nelson and Mario Van Peebles, who's also in it. Vanessa Williams, and I mean, just we'll go through the cast. There's a whole bunch of really incredible actors in this thing, some of whom were really just kind of starting to get known and starting to get figured out. But, you know, when this film came out, you know, it was really at the height of the crack epidemic in America, and, you know, it supposedly takes place in the late 1980s. The film came out in 1991, and this is a real kind of thing that was going on. Just like we have, you know, today we have the opioid crisis going on. This is what was going on back in the day, and, you know, to hit this problem so head on with this story. And we'll talk a little bit about how this story got developed, but to hit the story so on the nose and accurately, really, was just really amazing. And, you know, I probably have, like, this, like I said before, this movie was on, I think it was HBO, could have been Showtime, I don't know, but it was on one of the movie channels, like, all the time in the late 90s. And I've watched this thing dozens of times, but I probably have not watched this movie since like 1999, maybe 2000, somewhere around there. And so the opportunity to go back and revisit it and look at these characters and look at the storytelling and see what's going on, really my view kind of surprised me in a lot of ways. I mean, one, I still really like this movie. I still think this is a great film. But I was really impressed by a lot of the acting choices that were made in it, and how good some of these actors really were in this film. And, you know, it's very apparent. This is Mario Van Peebles' first feature. He went on to have a terrific career, mainly as a TV director. But you could tell this is a new director. Some of the choices that he made in this are very, I don't want to say trite, but they're very, you know, a lot of weird angles and you know, quick zooms and, you know, just a lot of stuff that you would have seen in a lot of films of the day. And he kind of goes to them early on in the film. But it does start to level out later on. And I think he makes some interesting choices that we'll talk about a little bit later. Wesley Snipes, you know, Wesley Snipes and Ice-T were a really interesting choice to lead this film. And, you know, they were not necessarily the original idea of who was going to be leading this film. I think Wesley Snipes was. I think Snipes was always early in the running and was one of the first people to sign on and was always the idea for who was going to be in this film. But let's back it up a little bit. So the story for this film was originally written by a guy named Thomas Wright. And the kind of bones of the story were actually written as a script for, or as a story treatment for, the third episode of The Godfather. The kind of bones of the story were really going to be laid into that. And it was, Italians, and it was the mafia, and it was, I think it was more heroin than it was going to be crack or cocaine. And over years, the story eventually developed out, and Wright partnered up with a guy named Barry Michael Cooper, who was a writer for the Village Voice, and he had done an expose on the crack crisis in Detroit. And so one of the versions of this was it was going to take place in Detroit, and then they kind of caught some information from a real-life guy named Nicky Barnes, who's kind of a real-life crime boss in New York. And then the story eventually migrated its way back into New York and wound up kind of where we're at with it right now. As I said, Wesley Snipes was really early on going to be Nino Brown and was the guy that they were looking at for this. Interestingly enough, there were some other kind of ideas. Michael Wright, who was in a lot of films. I mean, one of the films that I remember him from early on was The Principal with Jim Belushi, where he played he was kind of the opponent in that. But he was in another movie that Robert Townsend had done about some singers, called The Five Heartbeats, in which actually came out the same year as this one. He was originally considered for the role of Scotty. Oh, I'm sorry. He was actually considered for the role. Yeah, Scotty, and decided he was going to do the Five Heartbeats instead. You know, Ice-T, who really kind of had an interesting career. You know, he had done a couple of small. He had done a couple of small films and some small appearances. He was in films like he was in Breakin' and Breakin' 2, The Electric Boogaloo. And in 88, he had done the title song for the film Colors, which was a really great cop film with Robert Duvall and Sean Penn. And then he gets this role, and you know, what's kind of interesting about it is he kind of gets into the film world in a big way with a police movie, and then he gets his first really big starring role playing a cop, and then, you know, 2 years later, he comes out with Cop Killers, which got a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of people upset, especially law enforcement, and then, you know, 9 years later, he steps into another iconic role as a police officer, which he's been in for 23 years. So it's just kind of an interesting way that his kind of career has gone. You know, another interesting choice was instead of having Alan Payne play G-Money, there's going to be a singer named Orange Juice Jones, who was originally slated for that role. He had a big song back in the 80s called The Rain, you know, blame it on the rain, but you don't want me to sing. So, and then the other big kind of casting piece in this was Judd Nelson as Scotty's partner, Nick Peretti. And this is a really weird character in this movie. I mean, my first question that I had written down about this is, you know, my notes here says, what movie is Judd Nelson in? Because he is definitely not in this movie. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. He's basically, you know, he's like, it's almost like he's basically playing John Bender, you know, all over again, as if, you know, John Bender had hated his parents so badly, he had moved out of Chicago, changed his name, gone to New York, become a cop. And this is basically, you know, 10-year older Judd Nelson, 10-year older John Bender is really the way that he's kind of playing this. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of a weird role for him, and it's kind of a weird role kind of shoehorned into this movie, but oddly enough, it kind of works. I mean, there's some weird pieces to it. There's some other great people in this thing. Obviously, we said Mario Van Peebles is in it as the police captain. Bill Nunn, who had really kind of made a name for himself in Do the Right Thing as Radio Raheem. You know, he's in this as Dutta Man and Bill Cobbs, who is, you know, a great character actor who's been in 1,000 different things, is in there as the old man. Tracy Camilla Johns, who, you know, she's in this. She's in a couple other things. She's in a Spike Lee movie, and then she just kind of falls off the face of the earth, stops acting. You know, Michael Michelle, plays Nino's girlfriend, Selena. She's fantastic in this film. She's really, really great. You know, Vanessa Estelle Williams as Keisha, you know, really great. Like this psychotic killer, but she's a woman, you know, a black woman in the early 90s. I mean, this is not the kind of casting that you would expect for a film like this. And then, so all of these people, and Chris Rock, you know, Chris Rock playing Pookie is really the thing that brought him out and made him known as an actor. And it's cool because this wasn't even supposed to be his role. Martin Lawrence was supposed to have this role. He was cast in this role. He was ready to go. And then, from what I understand, a good friend of his passed away, and he was really kind of broken up about it, and he didn't really want to work on the film. And then they gave it to Chris Rock, and he just, you know, he just killed it. So that's kind of the kind of how this film got made kind of thing. But let's talk about the movie. You know, the one thing that really jumped out about me, that really just kind of surprised me in my rewatch, is that Nino Brown, you know, Wesley Snipes, Nino Brown, is, man, he's a bad dude, and he is, like, he's more evil than I remember. And, you know, I think if you look at, you know, kind of the folly of youth, you know, we look at things like this, and you know, a foolish 20-something might look at Nino Brown and be kind of enamored with his lifestyle and his flair and his fashion sense and his money and the things that he does. He's got a sword cane, and he's got cool suits, and he's always fly, and he's always got women around him, and he's always got flashing money, and he walks into the club, and he's like, yeah, you're gonna break me down? You're gonna pat me down? And they just let him go. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's so cool. And it's funny. It's kind of one of those things like, well, I mean, let's put it this way. So we'll jump ahead to Robert Ebert's review of this film. And he said Truffaut, referring to François Truffaut, the famous French filmmaker, Truffaut once said it was impossible to make an anti-war movie because the war sequences would inevitably be exciting and get the audience involved in one side or the other. It's almost as difficult to make an anti-drug movie, since the lifestyle and money of the drug dealers looks like fun, at least until they're killed. Right? So there's that thought that originated with Truffaut, that every anti-war movie is a pro-war movie, because you have to show war, and there's going to be somebody in your audience that's going to be like, that's really cool. And it's kind of the same thing with these drug kingpin movies. It's like, yeah, but he's fly, man. He's cool. He's, you know, he lives the lifestyle that I want to live. And so it's a balancing act that you have to put on one of these movies to show the, you know, the anti-drug side of it, and to show the danger of these things to society when, you know, these guys live a lifestyle a lot of times. And, you know, I remember watching Narcos, and you watch the life that Pablo Escobar had. He had this big house, and, you know, he had a private zoo and all these airplanes and money everywhere, and everybody was terrified of him, and he could do whatever he wanted to do. And, you know, and at some level, people may be like, man, that's cool to be like that, you know, and they don't really kind of think about how Pablo ended and or what he wrought on society. And this is one of those movies that kind of asks that question and makes you look at, like, what does this drug and the people who push it do to their community and do to the people around them and do to America at large? And a lot of times it's people in those communities who are pushing on that community. And when does the community push back? And when does the community say, no, no more? Whether that's the city, whether that's the city government, whether it's, you know, law enforcement, or it's just ordinary citizens in the city pushing back and saying no. I really like the way they, you know, put this kind of juxtaposition between Scotty Appleton, the cop, and Nino Brown, the drug dealer, and how Van Peebles puts them together for so much of the movie. And ostensibly it's because, you know, Nino doesn't trust, you know, Scotty as this undercover agent who's trying to infiltrate his organization. He doesn't know him, although he's tempted by what he's offering. So he wants to keep him close so he can keep an eye on him. But they wound up developing this kind of relationship and this kind of friendship. And it culminates with this kind of really cool scene with these two guys, like, up on a roof, and they're having this conversation, and you know, so Scotty's mom, you know, early in the film we discover that Scotty's mother had been killed when he was a small boy, you know, a random shooting on the street, and she wasn't anything to anybody, and she had just, you know, walked out of a store and just got shot. And then Nino reveals that, you know, when he was first joining a gang, you know, when he got jumped in, he was told that he had to just kill some random person on the street. And, you know, he got high and he walked up to some woman and, you know, stepped up to her, put his gun to her head, and just blew her away. And, you know, we come to realize that this Nino is the one who killed Scotty's mom. And Scotty is there finding this out, and he's got to hold it together. And, you know, from that comes, like, one of the two really great lines in this film about it being business, not personal.
You must think I'm a demon, huh? I guess what you was doing, I was like business, right? Wasn't personal. My brother, it's always business, never personal.
The other great line being, you know, the thing that that Nick, the Judd Nelson's character, says when he's talking about drugs, and you know, there's racial tension obviously going on in this film as well. But he says, you know, when he's talking about crack, he's like, he says it's not a black thing, it's not a white thing, it's a dead thing, you know, and he's right. You know, these drugs were an equal opportunity killer. They didn't care what the color of your skin was. And so that becomes like a kind of an important part, and it's mentioned a couple times in the film. To me, there's really like three really striking visual pieces in this film. One of which is, or, you know, really striking story pieces in this film, I should say. One of them is, you know, the rooftop scene that I talked about. One of them is just the opening scene. You know, you have this kind of long, as the credits are coming, you have this long kind of overhead view of New York City. And it's kind of really reminiscent of, like, West Side Story, you know. It's just kind of this high angle overhead flying over the city. But then there's this zoom down into the East River onto this bridge, and you find, you know, Nino and G-Money hanging a guy off the bridge and, you know, and eventually dropping him off. And you find out right in that first scene all you need to know about Nino Brown, who he is, what he's capable of. And this is, and again, this is the thing that I didn't remember this way, is how cold and calculating and methodical that Nino Brown is. He's a, you know, he's really like a sociopath. He does not, he focuses on what's at hand. He focuses on building his business. He focuses on building his organization and the people around him. Even his best friend from when he was a child, G-Money, is disposable to that end. And he is really quick to turn on his friends. And, you know, when he's faced with the idea of, you know, being caught, he, you know, he very quickly will turn and blame somebody else for it. You know, his private banker, Kareem, he fingers him as being the, you know, the head of the organization, you know, which is the, you know, brings us to the third kind of really poignant piece, which is, you know, at the end of the film scene, one at the beginning of the film, one in the middle of the film, and then at the end of the film, you have this courtroom scene where they've arrested Nino, and he's out there, and he pins this thing. He pins it on Kareem, but more importantly, he pins it on society. He says, I'm not the one who's guilty. You are the one who's guilty.
I'm not guilty. You're the one who's guilty. The lawmakers, the politicians, the Colombian drug lords, all you who lobby against making drugs legal, just like you did with alcohol during the Prohibition. You're the one who's guilty. I mean, come on, let's kick the ballistics here. Ain't no Uzis made in Harlem. I mean, not one of us in here owns a poppy field. This thing is bigger than Nino Brown. This is big business. This is the American way.
You're kind of reminiscent of one of the other, you know, quick lines. There's some great lines in this film, but the quick lines in the film, you got to rob to get rich in the Reagan era. You know, it's this whole thing. It's like society has put me here, and I am just filling a need. I'm just filling a hole that society has created for me to fill, and you guys are really all to blame. And it's really kind of turning back this whole idea. So this is, I mean, this is very much a message film, which, again, surprised me. Like, I don't remember that it was really so on the nose, and it hit this anti-drug message so hard. But it really did. You know, so I would say that, like, this film is much more than I remembered. And it's much more of a important piece of what was happening at that time. I mean, there's a lot of things in this film that are dated. Obviously, some of the costumes. I don't know what was going on with Ice-T's wig in this film. I don't even know what was happening. Nino's, you know, I mean, well, Nino's outfits always look good, but everybody else, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, stuff like that. The really awful portrayal of Italian-American mobsters in this is just god-awful. It's like they went out and found, like, the worst white actors to play mafia guys and just put them in, I don't know, as a contrast to all the great African-American players that we're working on. You know, all these great black actors are in this film, and these really terrible white actors are in this film. But those guys are just a parody. They're just really awful. But honestly, everybody else in this film is just really at the top of their game, really fantastic. And this, you know, just to go back to what I was saying at the top, this is really kind of this important film in American cinema at the time, because coming out of the 80s, you know, you did not have films like this with black actors taking such a prominent role. You know, Wesley Snipes was a guy who came out and really began to change the way, like, I hate to say change the face of cinema, but he really did in a lot of ways. You know, there really wasn't a lot of other any other really black actors in this space at the moment. You know, they had tried to do Carl Weathers and make him a thing, but it didn't really land. And you know, Denzel hadn't happened yet. You know, at this point, that was just 1991. He hadn't even done Malcolm X yet. So he'd been in Glory. He'd been in a couple other things. You know, but he was still, like, people were still looking at him as a TV actor who were jumping into movies. Will Smith hadn't popped yet as a movie actor. You know, so there were, really, Wesley was really it. You know, and he at that point, you know, he had done a couple of things, you know, he had done a couple of small parts. 2 years before this, though, like, I guess his kind of introduction to the world, and, you know, is Willie Mays Hayes in Major League, where he was absolutely fantastic. You know, he's in King of New York, which is kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a parallel piece to New Jack City here. And then, you know, of course, he does Mo' Better Blues with Spike. And then he hits this, and this is just kind of turns it around. And then he goes back, back with Spike with Jungle Fever, you know, and, you know, then he hits White Man Can't Jump. And then for him, it's just action. It just starts rolling for him, you know, in 92. He hits White Man. He hits Passenger 57. He gets Boiling Point and Rising Sun and Demolition Man and Sugar Hill and Drop Zone. He does, you know, Money Train and The Fan and Murder 1600, you know, all these kind of action films. But like, you know, right in the middle of that, he does like Tu Wong Fu, which is like, he's in a drag comedy. So he, you know, it's kind of an interesting run that he's got there. But he just kind of became the man for a while for these kind of roles for black actors. But it really, really kind of kicks off here with this film. So, you know, guys, I would definitely suggest that you watch this film. If you haven't seen it, it's out there. Go find it and watch it. It's really great early Wesley Snipes. It holds up really well. It's as relevant today as it was in 1991. You got some great, you know, up and coming actors giving some fantastic performances, and Judd Nelson doing the thing. And that's really all that I can say about it. I appreciate you listening. Next time we're going to do 2001, and stay tuned, and we're going to see what film I'm going to watch and I'm going to talk about. Thanks.